Club. Driving. No purchase necessary.
You're listening to Radio Free Urbanism.
Hello and welcome back to Radio Free Urbanism. We've got a great time coming for you guys here. I am your host, Alex Williams, and I've got three co-hosts joining us today. We've got Ethan.
Welcome back to the show, people.
And Ethan's going to be lagging throughout this whole episode, just so everybody understands what's happening here.
Hopefully, and then we've got not the audio.
Maybe we'll see. We've got two Nicks here. First, I'll introduce our guest co-host, Nick, coming in all the way from Europe.
Servus.
Yeah.
It means hello and goodbye.
Oh, okay. Good to know. I wasn't sure if that was like cheers or, you know, what.
No, cheers is post.
Okay. Okay. Yep. We'll learn a little bit of German here today. But Nick's on, he's got a YouTube channel, The Rural Urbanist. That's how we found him. He seems like a nice guy. And then we've also got The Real Nick, apparently, as he prefers to be known now, our regular co-host, Nick Laporte.
I respect that. I thought you were going to call me by my middle name or the other Nick or Nick number two or something like that. So thank you.
You know, yeah, the letter Scott.
The letter Scott.
Oh, man. Yeah. Inside jokes are fun to share on podcasts.
Yes.
So we've got a great show. We have a lot of interesting things coming up. But, of course, as people, listeners of the show know, Nick, our regular Nick, he just got back from a trip abroad. Nick, do you want to give us a quick update on that?
Yeah, I think I'm going to talk about it more at length next week, as I don't think we have a guest. But yeah, I talked about being in Japan a couple weeks ago, had an amazing time, obviously. And the thing I didn't mention about that was just the walkability there. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's incredible. And I was so happy to return to Japan. I can't wait to go again. But from there, we went to Thailand. And the stark difference between going from Osaka to Bangkok was just so jarring. First of all, the temperature difference. It was like 10 degrees in Osaka and then going to like 37 degrees and humid is first of all, yeah, like very shocking. But walking off the train in like close to downtown Bangkok and seeing a bike lane, I'm like, oh, there's a bike lane. But then I look and there's no bikes and there's just motorbikes everywhere. And like the air is hot and sticky and it's just like smells like diesel and motorbike exhaust. You can't get away from it. But the walkability, holy fuck, it is terrible. Like, if there's sidewalks, they're absolute garbage. There's nobody rolling there at all. Like, there's no way you're going to be in a wheelchair and actually get around safely. And you can understand why so many people have motorbikes or cars there, because that's all that's catered to. It's unreal. I couldn't believe it. That aside, Thailand had some amazing places to visit that were just absolutely beautiful. The wildlife was incredible. I saw so many monkeys. I wanted to play with them, but obviously you don't do that because they'll like bite your finger off or something. But it was really awesome. It was amazing.
That's cool.
But yeah, Japan wins the urbanism, like not even close. It's outrageous.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm reeling from that right now. I think it's 2:30 a.m. So like, I just came back from Thailand this morning. So like it's 2:30 a.m. for me. So I've been awake from 5 o'clock, I think. No, 4:30 I woke up at. Yeah, 4:30. So yeah, it's we're getting close to 24 hours of being awake. So
I do not envy you.
We'll see. Actually,
how we show. So my crash on the podcast.
Yeah.
I may also crash.
This
on
is
the
what
podcast.
We like to call the sleep deprived episode.
But speaking about trips, Ethan's got something to update us with.
So yeah, folks, it looks like in the next month or two, I will be going back to LA for some sort of trip. Nothing super like solid concrete yet, but it is in the works and hopefully I'll be going there at the quickest amount. It'll be a day trip, but you know, it might be an overnight, but stay tuned on that.
Nice. And an update from me here. I'm enjoying myself. This is good. This is stress relieving because I'm very stressed right now. Tonight, as we're recording this, the vote whether or not to do an RCG plebiscite in the next election, potentially putting upzoning in Calgary back another 18 months is up for discussion in Calgary City Council right now. So I'm a little stressed, but by the time this episode comes out, we'll know if that's a thing or not. I'll post an update in the comments of this video so we can talk about that, and hopefully we can keep pushing this through, and hopefully it doesn't get delayed some more. But of course, we've got a lot to ask our new friend Nick here. He's in Germany, and he has some thoughts on trains and stuff.
Yeah, so upon moving to Germany, I'd always had been interested in public transit and especially railway transportation. I grew up in a town that had access to a train, which only took about an hour and a half to get into the city of Boston. It's the Downeaster. For those of you from New England, southern New England,
hold your horses.
Yes.
We got another American on the show. Is that what I'm hearing right now?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. We almost had a takeover, but we made it to 50-50 at least.
Wait, you guys didn't know Nick was American?
No. I just assumed he was Canadian.
You guys never watched any of my videos. Jeez. I mean, it's only about 3 hours south of Quebec up there, but it's not like that. It's not that Canadian where I live.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring up the American joke.
Well, no, I was going to ask because I could hear your accent, Nick, a little bit, and I was thinking, are you from what part of Canada are you from?
I'm from Ontario.
You are from Ontario, from
New York. Yeah.
Okay, because you have a very similar accent to some family members I have in the Buffalo area, yeah. Niagara Falls.
Yeah, I was like an hour drive from there.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. No. Sorry, sidetrack. I love Canada. I just want to declare my allegiance to Prime Minister, Supreme Leader Trudeau, the junior. No. Honestly, I love Canada. I've been coming there for years. My family used to go up every summer to Ottawa to skate on the Rideau Skateway.
Nice.
And I just have so many good memories from vacation in Canada. And just, I love Toronto. My sister is named after, her middle name is named after Victoria Island on the West Coast. So,
nice.
Yeah. I like your country. Please don't hurt me.
Much appreciated. You can stay on the show.
Good.
So, okay. Sorry, so you're from the East Coast.
Yep. Yes, correct. Yeah, so I mean, growing up, there was always access to rail transportation in my town, and it was a gateway to the rest of the world for me. And I think just something about having a good train station in my hometown, also one that happened to serve ice cream, really had an influence on me as a kid.
Yeah.
Because I always wanted to go to that station, and I always wanted ice cream. And to look at trains, and just so many great memories I associate from my childhood with that. And I think that had a bigger influence on me as I was growing up. And when I started, so actually I met my wife on a train. That's something, a long distance Amtrak train, actually the Chief, Southwest Chief number 4.
Nice.
And yeah, complete strangers that just started talking to each other. And now it was 2017. So let's test the American education system. I think that's been 7 years. Yeah, something like that.
Oh, man.
Wow.
And
that's going to be turned into a fanfic.
Yeah.
Some like romance train fanfic.
I know, but
doing
I feel
that
like
themselves that with their marketing. Have you seen that?
Well, I talked, apparently it's more common than you'd think. I talked to the guy who started the Downeaster, and yes, it was one guy. His name is Wayne. He's awesome. I think he's like in his 90s now, but one day he looked out his window at some train tracks and wondered why there weren't trains on them. And then after like 20 years of hard work, the Downeaster happened. There's more to that story, but that's the way he describes it. And he told me that they have had several weddings on the Downeaster. They've had people who've met on the Downeaster. I think that there's just something about that mode of transportation, which is so much more romantic. Like, you'd never meet somebody in traffic.
Right.
You wouldn't fall in love with a person in like a car next to you. This isn't La La Land. Okay.
Yeah.
For those of you that have seen that, actually, that's a bad counterexample.
They have to fabricate things.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So we met on train and eventually I started coming to Germany more often. I came once to visit her, and that was, you know, I'd been to Europe before but only once as a kid. And I, you know, enjoyed the French rail system, but they were on strike most of the time. This was in 2010. And so we didn't do as much getting around as we did, like sitting in the train station, waiting for somebody to not be on strike. But yeah, as I started visiting Germany more specifically, I realized as I used the system more how practical it was. Like something I think a lot of people, when they look at Europe, it's just this big block and everything has great railway transportation, but it's not uniform. And what I mean by that is that different countries do rail transportation differently. France, for example, is known for having the first high-speed rail system in Europe, if I'm not mistaken. And that's great. It's a great system. The TGV is wonderful. And if you need to get to Paris, it's really ideal. But if you need to get around the rest of the country, they don't have the perfect network for that. They lost a lot of their local and regional lines, kind of sacrificed, I think, almost to make the high-speed lines work. Don't quote me on that. Maybe ask a French person. But when you look at the German system, what we did here is essentially preserve the whole thing. So we have an incredible regional rail system. And with that, you can get to almost any small village or middle-sized town or city or anything in between with proper railway transportation. So if it had a station historically, it probably still has it today. So like, that's just something I find interesting. And when I started visiting here, I realized that the regional rail, has a lot of advantages over just high speed rail, because, you know, I don't know if you guys, what your experiences are with, railway transportation in the US or maybe even in other countries, but I think the trains that most people use every day to get to work, to see their family, anything, are those regional trains. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. You bring up something really important, like talking about that, is that like, if there is in Alberta, if there was a high speed rail between Calgary and Edmonton, but Calgary and Edmonton didn't have any regional trains or any light rail within the city, there was no connections, there was no even bike share or bike paths, right? Like, if you have to use a car on either end of that rail, well, people are just going to skip the train and just drive because they need their car there anyways.
Yeah, you lose the network effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
The network effect is huge. And a lot of the time I say this a lot. I know you say this a lot, Nick, too, that, you know, it's great to, you know, get that 220 mile an hour high speed rail. Everybody wants to achieve that. But some routes, it's better to go the 125 mile an hour route, run more frequency on the route, and then, you know, get that ridership, build up the network with other ways. And there's one really good example of it in the U.S., and that would be the Northeast Corridor, especially in like New Jersey, because it has those last mile connections in a lot of spots.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ethan, I don't know if you're still lagging. You might still be talking, but you're frozen on the screen.
I'm sorry. I started laughing.
Yes.
No.
Oh, yeah. You're back.
I'll just do like a moment.
Yeah. I know. It's loving to do that to me today.
This isn't normal.
I'm sorry for interrupting your train of thought.
No, you're all good.
So something I want to ask you about. You mentioned the strikes in France. I want to hear kind of your thoughts around like how that fits into urbanism. We've mentioned strikes on the show before, So what are your thoughts around how that fits into urbanism and then kind of like the broader scope of how you think of urbanism, especially from your perspective as the rural urbanist, right?
Yeah. So I think for me, so first thing, I think that the right to strike is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. You know, having grown up in the US and, you know, not even being able to talk about unions and workers' rights at work without fear of getting fired or let go of, because I mean, you just hear and see so many stories about that. You may even know somebody that happened to. And so it's something that needs to be protected, especially in private companies. But then on the flip side of that is when you're a transit agency, when you're a government transportation operator or just a transportation operator in general, I think that unions have to be very careful about how they present their strikes, how they control the messaging for the strike. Because if you look at, for example, and I do have to be careful with this, just a disclaimer, I do work for Deutsche Bahn. None of these opinions are Deutsche Bahn's opinions. they are my own. So with that in mind, I am also not currently a member of either of the unions at Deutsche Bahn. We have two of them. So with that in mind, I think that they have to control the messaging around it. And in Germany, the unions have so far, especially the GDL right now, which is the locomotive drivers union, has not done the greatest job of getting customers on board with them. Hmm. Right. And if you see a lot of the coverage in the press, I think a lot of it is unfairly negative. And I think a lot of people also don't really understand what they're asking for. Yeah. Right. And the union, the locomotives drivers union, is asking for essentially a reduction in working hours with the same pay. That is their primary demand, which is, I don't know if you guys have any experiences with what strikes and unions and that whole world, but that's not the most normal thing that a union asks for or strikes over. Yeah. Normally it's an increase in pay. It's an increase in benefits. But in this case, it's a decrease in something or in a keeping the same. And the problem is, you know, some progress has definitely been made. But the, you know, Deutsche Bahn is not, I don't know if they're able to give them that reduction, especially because we already have a pretty severe driver shortage. And it's complicated. All this is basically to say that strikes, when it comes to transportation companies, when it comes to public transit and government, are much more complicated than they are exclusively in the private sector.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, I actually have the unfortunate ability here to kind of understand to some extent both sides with this.
Yeah.
And that isn't to be both sidist. I understand what both of them are saying. You know, one side is saying we just want to have more free time, better working hours. And, you know, there's history to back that up. The 40-hour work week exists because unions and working people fought for it. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side is the fact that we do have a pretty severe driver shortage. We have a pretty severe, honestly, any type of hand worker shortage in the railway and in a lot of things in Germany. And that's kind of what's driving some of the resistance from the company side. It's, in my opinion, not that they don't want to give it, because this strike has been pretty damaging to both the union and Deutsche Bahn from a perception perspective. But it seems like they're just sort of deadlocked, and it's not clear to me anyways what is going to happen moving forward. The strikes, I don't know have you guys read up on that at all? What's happening here?
No, I've heard nothing about it.
Oh, okay. That's actually very interesting, because there is a lot of English language reporting on it, but it doesn't make it everywhere. Yeah, so it's interesting that it hasn't really been covered a lot on the US, or at least the English-speaking side. I mean, that's understandable to some extent, but it's something that's easily misunderstood. So I think my point with all this is that right now the people I think who are the most frustrated outside of maybe everybody's frustrated, but the people who are probably the most frustrated are the customers who don't know if they're just going to have a day where they can't take the train into work or right. to the gym or to school or something. My point earlier, the reason I asked about that is because the reason I asked how it's covered is because the strikes here, they're essentially warning strikes. So instead of an indefinite strike, like you probably get in the US or Canada, it's more like they say, okay, they give a short notice. We are going to strike for 24 hours or we're going to strike for 48 hours or something. They announce it and it's only for a specific period. I don't know exactly what the rules are relating to that. I don't know if that's required somehow, but that's basically what it looks like here. And so basically you'll just get a message or you maybe show up and realize, oh shit, there's no trains going today. And that kind of leads into my next point about reliability. You know, I think more important than speed and, you know, almost as important as coverage is, and probably slightly less than frequency, is reliability. Mm-hmm. Do you have the belief that when you show up to a station, a bus stop or something, a vehicle will show up and take you the direction that you're trying to go? And in the past years, based on a variety of factors, under investment in maintenance, especially in the railway sector in Germany, reliability has dropped. And now, you know, these strikes are coming in at a time where we're having a lot of mechanical failures of the infrastructure, a lot of personnel shortages causing failures, trains not driving. It's devolving into a situation where now if you look at the publicly available reliability numbers or on-time performance numbers for Deutsche Bahn specifically, I think it's somewhere in the 70s range for their long distance trains, and Regio is doing much better. I think they're in the 90s, but that's just, Alex.
I know. Scam calls, they'll get you. And I never have my ringer on. I'm embarrassed.
It's okay.
One time he doesn't have his ringer on and no time. Do not disturb.
I know. I'm sorry. Please continue, Nick.
Yep, no worries. jump right back in there. Yeah. And it's caused a situation where people have an easy excuse not to take public transit, not to take the train. And, whether it be that on-time performance, whether it be trains just not showing up. And I don't know how that's affected mode share. I don't have that information. Actually, now after this episode, I'm going to have to look that up. But it's definitely, I think, convinced a lot of would-be customers to not make the switch over to relying on it completely. And I don't blame them, genuinely. I don't blame people who are nervous about, putting their faith in something that to this point in the past 5, 10 years or so has not always been the most predictable. I'm able to do it because I live in a mid-sized city.
Yeah.
But, if you live in a village or something, even if it has great transit connection, it tends to affect those rural places more.
Yeah.
Transit reliability, it seems to be, it's simple logic. You put the effort into preserving the service in the place where the most people notice it, or where the most voters are, where the most financial things are happening. And then in a smaller village, okay, maybe it doesn't matter if this bus that only comes once every 3 hours only shows up, once every 5 hours, 6 hours, or if, cancel a few trips in the middle because a driver didn't show up or got sick or something and there's nobody to replace him. And so that's the kind of thing that also has the potential to snowball, because then people aren't taking it as often because of things like that. And then there's no excuse to fund it. And it's difficult. It's a really difficult problem once this sort of thing starts. And unfortunately, sometimes money is the only solution.
Yeah. Yeah, and you got to fund the things that you care about, yeah. right? And like whatever that is, you got to fund the things, like however you are looking for people to get around, you got to care about that, and you got to make it a reliable mode of transportation. And obviously, like any mode of transportation is going to have these like moments of unreliability, right? When you get a flat tire on your bike, or it gets stolen, or your car breaks, or it gets stolen, or, you know, like,
yeah.
Your
road is closed.
Yeah. Or like,
there's traffic, or
your feet get locked off on your way out of your house, right? And you can't walk anymore. You know, like all of the, like any mode of transportation has some level of unreliability. But I think so often, like, transit, when it's hit like this, it can become catastrophic. Hopefully it's not. We do have to move on to the next story. So if you have any final thoughts on this one, Nick.
Just kind of a closing thought on that. So going back to looking at the strike and the strikes, and, you know, this is something, it's a hard question to answer. And, you know, I think not alone in my opinion that both sides, you know, probably should negotiate with you and compromise. I think one thing that I just want to lead that into is that, you know, right now we're on a podcast about urbanism, right?
Yeah.
But what are we talking about? We're talking about strikes. And yes, it's related to transit and transportation, but I think that something I've noticed in my own thinking about urbanism and cities is that there's a lot more to cities and urbanism than just the things that normally get talked about on urbanist videos and podcasts and books. You know, it's more than just zoning and transportation, bicycling and walking. I think those are the main things that we talk about, right? But I've been reading, Jane Jacobs' book, The Death and Life of Great American Cities. I think,
yeah.
Raise your hand if you've read it in this.
Hey, I actually got it sitting over there on my bookshelf.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think what I was really surprised about after having read like Strong Towns and watching a lot of urbanist content online is that she doesn't start off in the place that I'd expect. You know, she talks about crime, and that's, you know, something I think it's still incredibly relevant today, because even if crime is not as bad as what it was in the 60s and 70s and 80s in New York City, it's still something that especially maybe conservatives would probably think is really bad in cities. You know, if I talk to my parents, that's like the first thing they tell me when they think about cities or I mention the city, they're like, oh, the crime is really bad there. And it's something that I think we on the left cannot ignore. Because it will be talked about. And that's something that I've just kind of had to tune into that with like my smaller town rural background, is that people in those places are less understanding of what crime is in cities and I think we just can't underestimate how much things like that and other things besides what we normally talk about affect how people interact with cities. So,
right.
Going forward, I think in my own work, I also want to try and focus on more different things, whether it be nature or crime, probably not politics, but just more diverse topics, that culture, things that are also incredibly important to the places we live. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the end of my story.
Awesome. 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 I appreciate that. That's like a really valuable and unique insight that you bring, especially because, like, a lot of the time we're talking about big cities in the urbanist space online. A lot of the time we're talking about the built form rather than, you know, the policies and the social aspects and the way that that we move around those spaces politically rather than just physically. So I appreciate that. We're going to go on to Ethan's story here. Ethan, what do you got for us?
All right, folks. So, as you may have noticed, the Oscars recently just happened, And we're not going to be talking about Best Pictures winners or anything like that, because, you know, this is Radio Free Urbanism, and we got to talk about urbanism content. So there's a little known actor by the name of Ed Begley Jr. You may know him from his roles in Better Call Saul, where he played Cliff Mayne. You may know him from Young Sheldon. But recently, and well, I mean, it's not really a recent phenomenon from him, but every single year he attends the Oscars, and he doesn't go by car the normal way that you might think a lot of other celebrities do. His daughter actually decided to, just like last year, share how he got to the Oscars this year. And let me just share the video. I don't know if there's going to be any audio that plays with it. You know, we have this wonderful little thing. But, you know, we'll see.
As long as we don't get a copyright strike.
I don't think we will. Yeah. And plus, no. We're not monetized anyways. So.
Okay, that's true.
His daughter posted this video.
How are you doing there?
I'm driving.
And you're what?
Taking the subway.
Whatever.
Even though I wasn't my dad's plus one to the Oscars this year, he still wanted to take Metro to the awards.
Riding the Metro since before it was the Metro, it was the RTD. It's taking the 93 line downtown into Hollywood. But Hollywood highly catch the 91W and get to Century City and places like that. I still ride it. I love it. My Academy pin for being a governor for 15 years. My Metro pin for being a writer. It's 1962.
As someone who has thrice taken the bus to the subway and then walked about half a mile in 7-inch heels to the Oscars, I do understand my mother's hesitation. Thank God there are people like my dad who don't mind wearing running shoes on a red carpet.
A little walking, and here we are.
Bye, Dad. Give me a little wave. I love
so,
you.
Yeah, awesome. It's just little, you know, like fun, you know, heartwarming urbanist content that, you know, it's always nice to see in your feed rather than, you know, a lot of the doom and gloom stuff that gets posted a lot. And it's also really nice to see that, you know, people care about transit. It doesn't matter, you know, your income bracket, because he's been an environmentalist and supporting public transit for, I mean, decades at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome, and it's nice to see a little bit more like publicity of that. We talked about this a few weeks ago with Taylor Swift's thing, right? Like people actually showing up and like doing like showing that you can do these exciting and interesting things without a car. And I think that's great. I'm gonna jump right into my story here. Because this show is all about me.
The show is all about.
Yeah.
Hold on, is this Asian American? Is this discrimination?
Yeah. It's honestly that's what it is. We let you talk so long, Nick, because you were so nice about us being Canadians. Otherwise, it would have been like a minute long, and I'd be like, "All right, guys."
Yeah, I'm just an asshole who makes maple syrup and hockey jokes.
Wow. I love maple syrup. Thank you again for letting me talk so much.
No. It's.
I have some in my fridge right now. If you want to see it,
I trust you. You've bought your legitimacy here with us. Your maple syrup and kind words. I have a short one as well here, talking about housing. So in Calgary, there is some non-market housing coming. This is a round of city land sales that should contribute about 289 more non-market units. And actually in this specific case, they are prioritizing sales to Indigenous organizations. So the lots aren't fancy here. I'm going to share my screen here with you folks. So here we've got this one at 295 Aaron Woods. Anybody want to buy this? Only $650,000 plus GST. We've got
good deal.
This one in the Northeast, one in the Southwest.
What's GST?
Government sales tax. Or goods and services tax.
Charging a sales tax besides the government?
Yeah. It's a sales
tax. Okay, sorry. That's anyways.
No, I guess that's important information. Sorry, sometimes I forget there are Americans here.
Wow.
No, so we just assume tax.
Yeah, it's a tax. And then, yeah, another one in the, actually a few in the Southwest. So, yeah, there's some good stuff actually going on down here in Calgary. So I'm pretty optimistic about that. I don't know if you guys have any comments about that. I'm happy to let the next person take the show from me as rudely as I did from Ethan. Sorry about that, Ethan.
All right, it's my turn to talk.
He's been silent for half an hour. I was thinking of something to say, and I just like shut off. Immediate brain shut off.
No, and sorry. If you guys ever do have me back on, please do what my co-hosts of my other podcast do, which is interrupt me or raise your hand politely until I shut up.
You were giving valuable insight, Nick. So I wasn't gonna stop you because it's a topic that we haven't covered a lot on the show, and when we have covered it, we've been undereducated on it. So I was like, we gotta let this man speak.
That's fair. Just wait until you get Alan Fisher on here. Then you'll get some real train talk. Okay, go, Nick.
That's how we'll get conversations that don't shut up about New Jersey or Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Okay, Nick.
Can I go
now? You can go.
Okay. Vancouver is considering the introduction of shared electric scooters, like a network of these scooters, this summer. And this is something that exists in other cities. It's existed and has died in other cities, but it exists on flanking cities like North Vancouver and Richmond in the greater Vancouver area, or in the Metro Vancouver area, as they like to call it. So this is aiming to offer a more flexible mobility solution that allows people to just pick up. If you don't know what this is, you pick up a scooter in a location, you go to where you need to go, and you drop it off in another location. And we already have these in a sense. We have Evo Car Share, and we also have bikes from a service called Mobi. That is not my favorite. I've been to many cities and tried different bike shares, and it's definitely the worst. Easily the worst one that I've ever ridden. I don't use them because I have my own bike here and scooters and stuff. But anyway, so this program, it's trying to alleviate congestion that we have now, but also anticipate the growth we're having, because all across Canada, the population is growing. And obviously that's going to add to congestion if you just keep cramming people into cars. So it's an option for people there, which I think is good, but they come with a lot of problems, and everybody knows that. But the thing is, these are not dockless. This is not going to be dockless.
Oh,
which
thank
I'm like,
goodness.
Please, thank God.
Thank like, God.
What's the problem with dockless?
I'm problems with tripping a lot of over things. Scooters.
Yeah. And I would prefer other things to get out of our cities before worrying about dockless scooters. But again, we don't need to add more crap onto the sidewalk to make it harder for people to walk and roll.
To be fair, I did suggest the great idea of whenever you see a scooter sitting on a sidewalk, you just put it in the street. Like a dockless scooter, you just put it in. It's great traffic calming. It's really good traffic calming.
Give that scooter what it deserves.
Yeah. So as much as I do like scooters, and I do ride one very frequently, often that's my main mode of transportation if it's not my bicycle, I have mixed feelings about these shared scooters. Mm. And it's not baseless. The problem is when you get with people on these things, usually some drunk people who are inexperienced, they hurt themselves and they hurt other people. However, when Paris banned them, I think this was last year that Paris banned scooters. They had these share scooters for, I think, 5 years. They banned them outright from a referendum. And the things that were cited, it was like, oh, they had this many deaths this year from scooters. And I go to look up, where's the details? Give me the details. Yeah. What are these deaths and injuries? And the first one's like, a young man on a scooter was hit by a truck.
Oh, my God.
And you're like, how is that a scooter death? That's a car death.
Yeah.
I'm just like, interesting. Oh. But that's, yeah. Again, there were, I think, two cases where somebody was riding a scooter. One hit some woman, she fell and hit her head, and she died. It's very tragic. It's sad. It's not what we want. But bikes are better. I'm just, that's the point I wanted to come
bikes
down to.
Bikes are better.
Bikes are better.
Bikes are better.
Even though I ride a scooter. I use a scooter.
Yeah.
Bikes are better.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried carrying anything on a scooter?
Yes.
Like I do that in my backpack.
Okay. Yeah.
But if you're going to put something on, like you need a bag, hang it right in the middle of the handlebars. But even if it's on the side, you're falling.
Even
down.
Then, I
even then don't do it.
I rode my e-scooter home once, and I had bought containers, so it was a pretty heavy package in this reusable grocery bag, and it was swinging around, and it's not great. It's really not great.
Bikes are better. Just wholesale.
Bikes are better. Yes. Yeah, I just mentioned that because I went to the post to pick up a box of computer parts to build the computer that I'm recording this on now, Hella Meta, and I've never been closer to death, ever.
Yeah.
The closest I've come to dying is having a massive box in one hand and the other hand on the screw arm. It's not, yeah. It doesn't work how physics should work.
No.
There's something wrong there.
There's no one-handing. It has to do with the actual angle of the scooter stem itself. Ooh. And you can get scooters that are very stable. I know, like, for example, Apollo has some that are more their higher end ones. The higher the angle is, the more it leans towards you,
the more stable
it's going to be. And you can do one handed, for example, but the ones I have two scooters, both of them. No, I was like, don't ever do one hand.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, well, how do I signal? It's like, you just use your foot. Like, use your body language. Yeah. Like, don't put your hand up.
Yeah.
You're going to wipe out.
Yeah. I use my feet to signal on a scooter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. So, yeah, this is good. I think it's a good thing. I'm interested to see how it goes, but I'm a bit apprehensive at the same time. So I would like Moby just to make better bikes in the first place. Mm-hmm. I think.
What's Moby?
Okay, they have the traditional problem that just there's a lot of hills here in Vancouver, which is not like saying fair. You can't bike ride, but to have a crappy bike and try to bike up hills. This was the experience I had when I was in Kyoto just a couple weeks ago. I rented a bike. It was a shitty old bike. When it's flat, totally fine. But as soon as there's any incline, it's just like, no, just no. They have electric bikes.
Okay.
They're terrible and they're expensive to use. Mm. They're just so bad. Like, I think
are
the top
like the
speed
lift
is like,
ones or?
No, they're not. I haven't seen any of them like this in any other city. Like, again, in Portland, awesome. San Francisco, fantastic. New York City,
I love
Portland. Amazing. Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. I actually have a picture. I actually have a picture of the Moby scooter here. If I can just go ahead and share my screen real quick.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not Moby or the bike share in Vancouver.
No. I have a picture of Moby scooters.
Moby scooter?
Yeah. This is what you're talking about, right?
That'd be amazing. Okay.
I tried to look them up, and this is unfortunately the first thing that came up. So
that's hilarious. That's what Nick's riding around Vancouver.
Yeah,
Vancouver terrible. On.
He's going to the Walmart.
It's
getting grayer by the day.
These things are all actually, though.
Yeah. No, it's. What? What do you say, Ethan?
What's these things on? Look weird. Like, what's with the giant keypad on the front of them?
Oh, it's just get the app that you can just scan it and you're good to go. It's weird. It is weird. And I'm not a fan of them. I've said that before, but I'm probably going to make a video about them this summer. Hopefully one of my co-hosts here is going to do some kind of what I say last week when Ben was on synergizing. Anyway, I'll talk about it more in the future. That's all I have to say about that right now.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. We're going to go into our listener mail segment. And actually, we're going to let our guest, Nick, start us off by reading this message that we got.
I was going to say, no one has ever sent me an email, although I do have a P.O. box now for my channel.
Someone
sent me a book about trolleys from a very specific town.
I'll send you physical mail.
That's kind of cool. Actually.
Yes, I do. Support the Postal Service. Go Postal Workers Union. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, listener mail number one. What is his name?
Pikey Wiki.
All right, listener name Pikey Wiki, also known as Pikey Kiwiki. sorry. What kind of YouTube videos, other than those on urbanism and mobility, do you enjoy watching? As for me, I like watching things from politics, science, history, etc. But when I just want to unwind, I watch bowling videos and Star Trek fan productions.
Was this Dan Carlin hardcore history? Like,
I don't know what just happened.
No, actually, I know this person personally, and that was a perfect impression of them. Actually,
good. Okay, I was. Shout out, I am also a Trekkie.
Are you? Dude, yeah.
Yes.
How many, is everybody here a Trekkie?
I watched so many episodes on the flight home, like Ethan, just what, today.
Ethan, we're going to get you into Star Trek, man.
Ethan, you suck.
Nick, you realize Ethan's one of the permanent co-hosts, right? Like, you can't insult him too much.
Yeah. Hey, look, just another Nick throwing shade on the show. It's nothing different than the normal episodes.
No, it's the honest New Englander coming out in me.
Ethan, yeah, we're going to get you into Star Trek.
Deep Space Nine is where it's at. But it's not where you should start.
Okay.
It's where you should go to TNG, after you've been TNG, a fan baby. For a while.
So, okay, here's the thing. My favorite Star Trek show is Strange New Worlds. It's just a fantastic, phenomenal show. Yes. but I think, like, if you want to, like, get into Star Trek, actually, you know what? I think Strange New Worlds is a good place to start, or The Next Generation. Those are two great shows. Or if you're really, really, really not sure about Star Trek, start with Lower Decks, and that'll be a good, like, just testing out the waters, some of the concepts, some of the characters and stuff.
Whatever you do, just don't watch Disco. Discovery.
We're going to have to agree to disagree on that, because I actually love Star Trek Discovery.
I'm getting myself so kicked off of this show.
I'm very excited for the fifth season. Ethan, we're going to get you into this. This is our new goal.
Oh, God.
But trust me, Ethan, just let it happen. You're going to love it. But actually, to answer this question, what I enjoy watching on YouTube other than urbanism videos, I like a lot of like movie critique stuff and cultural critique stuff, as well as I watch some not Star Trek fan productions, but I always watch like reviews of the Star Trek episode after I
Alex after confirmed I've watched nostalgia it. Critic fan.
No, actually.
Funny enough. Letter Media Picard reviews.
No. Picard.
Those were good, though.
Yeah.
I like Picard season 3 and only season 3. I haven't seen the others, and I don't need to see the others. The third season saved the whole damn thing.
Saved is a strong word. Saved is really... It washed out some of the bad taste.
God, we are getting sidetracked, and for the first time ever, I am going to be the one to bring us back. I will answer this next if you're done, Alex. Even if you're not done, I'll still answer this. Besides urbanist type stuff and bowling. Oh no, sorry. Besides urbanist type stuff, I also watch actually a lot of film review channels. I love cinema and like art house cinema. We have some great theaters here in Heidelberg that play like indie films. I also really like stuff relating to unions and workers' rights. So More Perfect Union is probably my most watched channel right now. And anything related to, honestly, nature, how things work. Watch a pretty wide range of stuff, personally.
That's awesome. Yeah. Ethan?
I generally watch a pretty wide range of stuff, but one thing that always keeps coming back to me is there's a lot of sports content out there that I'm a really big fan of. Specifically, two sports that are really big in the U.S. and then not so much elsewhere. NFL content, I'm a huge fan of Urinating Tree, there are some other great ones out there, Scooter Magruder. That kind of gang of NFL content creators, I'm just a really big fan of. And then there's also this really good account that kind of goes into like baseball documentaries and stuff like that. It's called Baseball Doesn't Exist. And you might have seen them in your recommended. Really good. Even if you don't like or watching baseball at all, they cover a lot of like the lore and like drama of the MLB because it goes very deep. And I think overall that those are just a couple of, you know, categories that I really just keep going back to.
Okay, I'm gonna watch some of this. Baseball Doesn't Exist.
Good channel.
Yeah,
it's good.
Okay, you made me curious.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
So on that point, I'm leading off that. Yeah, sports. I watch a lot of sports highlights. Rewatch F1 highlights after watching the race, kind of stuff. Sports like definitely a lot of hockey highlights. Occasionally baseball stuff too. obviously not right now. But the things that I really like if I'm sitting down just to have like lunch by myself, I love to watch channels about technology, but the deep dive stuff, like Technology Connections, probably one of my top YouTube channels. I absolutely love Alec and what he does over there. It's fantastic. He goes into the deep dives of like just regular crap. It's like ridiculous. Like just how like a percolating coffee maker works. Hmm. And he's really pedantic and I love it. It just like hits so good. He's got really dry humor.
Send me that. That videos. Sounds right.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's going to have to be something.
It's fantastic.
I watch.
But yeah.
What's that channel called?
Technology Connections.
Technology Connections.
But I was like going through my history, and I'm like, it's hard to find anything because I watch so much urbanism YouTube videos.
Yeah.
It's mostly that.
Yeah.
That's the bulk of it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Although I have the problems, sorry, just real quick side note, with urbanism content that I sometimes feel the need to save it for later when I'm in the right, like, headspace to take on something.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Because I actually, it's started, sometimes it feels like school. For me,
oh my gosh, like no, seriously.
Yeah. And then I'm like realizing I have this backlog of shit that I haven't watched, but that's either downloaded or saved. And it gets frustrating.
Yeah.
I love it, but it's like.
Becomes like a job when you're, making content around this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I want to give people good retention because I am firmly of the belief that my one view counts.
Yeah. Everything helps.
Surprisingly, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. If I know the person, I always try and click on it right away, but I don't usually pay attention right away. I usually have to go back and rewatch to actually.
I'll usually leave a comment like a good minute or two in just to, kind of adjust the algorithm, so that way it knows that I'm watching rather than at the very end or at the very beginning.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I have a couple new channels to check out. Our next question is from Austin Serson. He says, what are some of your most memorable sites on active/public transit? Nick, our original Nick, do you want to start us off?
Most memorable sites? Well, I'm just going to take from the recent trip when I was in Japan. We were on the Shinkansen and the view of Mount Fuji, snow-topped Mount Fuji, was just like, oh my God. Because I'd seen it before on the Shinkansen, but to see it like snow-topped on a clear sunny day was just like... boom. It's incredible. You see the whole thing. Like when you see a mountain, like you get to like here in Vancouver, you get to the bottom of a mountain. You're like, you can see some of it and you go up and you see more and more and more of it. No, but when you see Mount Fuji, you see the whole thing. It just slopes straight up. It's unreal. Cool. There's no mountain like it that I've seen. It's so cool.
All right. Flights are booked. I'm going to Japan.
Yeah. Seriously, we'll do a live podcast in Japan.
From the top of the mountain.
From the top.
Let's go.
Mount Fuji. That would be amazing. Okay.
Freezing my ass off up here.
It'll be worth it. Okay, Ethan.
So there are a lot that I've seen, or a lot of great views that I've seen from public transit. But I'm really going to have to go with the climb out of Denver when you're on the California Zephyr between Winter Park and Denver. It's just like a straight up climb up the Rocky Mountains in the U.S. And it is like, it's probably some of the steepest, like, sheer drop-offs that you'll see ever being on a train. And while it's not fast, it has just incredible views to the point where you stop giving a shit about time because you're just, like, you're, like, stunned by, like, the incredible, like, beauty that you're witnessing in front of you.
Yeah. That's all. Yeah. Man. It's a beautiful world. And it's nice when you can look out the window instead of driving. Nick, what's yours?
My wife.
She must be listening.
She is in the other room, but she probably has headphones on. I'll tell her I said that later. searching for points. No. Yeah. So honestly, yes. That wasn't actually what I was going to lead with. My answer was going to be much more German, which is all types of bodily fluids, drunkenness and detritus. I've seen some things, man.
Those are some memories.
Yeah.
sorry, if you ask any German that question, it's probably going to be something like, oh yeah, I saw a person run naked through the train, or oh yeah, I saw somebody vomiting on several other people. But that's
how fun.
Welcome to the fact that the trains here get cleaned like not often enough.
Ooh. Yeah, that's too bad. But yeah, your wife too, is a really neck. Sweet answer.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah,
we'll keep it at that.
I actually think that's great. And now I have hope someday that I might fall in love on a train myself.
Yeah, just don't go out with that goal because
that can,
it's creepy.
Yeah, that can cause problems pretty quick, I think.
Why is the strange man talking to me?
I like trains.
Hey, you know what kind of train this is?
I'm so
that
glad.
Was funnier when his mouth wasn't moving.
Watch, it's somehow going to be like all perfect. Like it happens. Like it was happening to Alex last week where he was like lagging on stream. And then like straight up like on the actual show, he wasn't lagging at all.
And then it's all fine. Yeah.
And then nobody will get our jokes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But for me, I'm actually going to go with an active transportation site on this one because Austin did throw that in there. And it's cycling around the Glenmore Reservoir. That used to be part of my commute. And the Glenmore Reservoir is the reservoir in Calgary. And I remember biking along there. The sun was setting. There was like an old couple sitting on a bench. There were young people down on the shore playing by the water. And there were some sailboats on the water as well. And it was just like gorgeous, gorgeous summer night. So I think that's probably my highlight. Ethan, you've got our next comment here.
That is right, folks. And this comes to us from the former host last week, Jen Hall. The comment says, in the Back to the Future movies, they feature a variety of transportation modes. And of note, hoverboards and a flying steam engine train. If you could create a form of mobility that doesn't currently exist, what would you create?
I've got something to say.
Okay. So,
when I was a child in the 90s, I absolutely loved Back to the Future, and specifically Back to the Future Part 2, which is where he goes to 2015 and rides the hoverboard. I'm not joking. I was probably like 7 or 8 years old. I went to the library because I was like, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to figure out how to make hoverboards work. And the librarian's like, I don't fucking know where to start. Like, kid, I don't know. Just like gave me physics books. And I looked at it and I was like, I took it home. Couldn't read it, obviously.
Yeah.
And then that was that. Gave up.
You gave up too quick. I was hoping you were going to tell us you're like a billionaire who's invented the hoverboard and it's used in military applications or something.
His story was podcast size and length.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Well, I think that's beautiful. Does somebody else have a great story like that to share? About inventing a new form of mobility?
That's a good question, but it's like the perfect one already exists. So,
yeah.
I was going to say,
yeah.
If I was to invent a new form of transportation, I would take a bunch of things, maybe, you know, and attach them together, put some metal wheels on them, maybe lay some tracks, get some ties.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then have something pull it. Not determine what. So I think the perfect mode, well, almost perfect, that now that I work in the industry, it's not perfect, but the best mode exists.
It's true. It's true. I remember like Nick thinking about flying cars and like, I was like, how would I do this? Like, how would I do that? And the answer was always magnets. But I never made any prototypes or anything. I also gave up. I don't know. We have it so good. Like we've really, you know, that's a good question, Ethan.
Well, you brought up magnets and you brought up trains. Why don't we combine them?
if we could
make maglev work, I swear that would be the coolest thing. But the problem is that it's going to cost us like $20 trillion just to go like 5 miles.
No, that's why you just put it in a vacuum. You put it in a vacuum sealed tube.
Or better, what we do is we build really, really cheap tunnel boring machines
that
make tunnels so small, only small vehicles can fit through them. And then what we do is we personalize these vehicles to go between different stations. So that way you can go directly between them, and then you don't have to deal with traffic.
I love it. Do you know what, Ethan? Ethan, actually, that's such a good idea. You're so innovative. You're like a modern day Tesla, honestly.
All right, guys. I now need $25 billion in capital funding.
Yeah, can you just quickly?
No. Go ahead.
Quickly explain what you're referring to.
I'm joking about the Tesla loop in wherever Vegas. They're building it. They're building one in Vegas, but you know, other cities are still.
Oh my goodness!
Chasing the purple dragon of Tesla loop tunnel thing.
Yeah, I mean, maglevs are a bit of a sore subject in Germany. Deutsche Bahn did try them. They did create a test track, and then a few people died. So
wow,
yeah, and not a lot of people know about it.
Yeah, that is.
Now we do.
Now,
like dozens of people know about it.
Yeah. Yeah, we have.
Oh, Jesus.
We have.
It's not a company secret. I heard that outside of the company. And I don't think it was completely. I feel like it was one of those things they just put their logo on. Which,
for those of you
that don't know, Deutsche Bahn is in 112 countries and has like 400,000 employees. So,
wow.
The German railway is the world's railway, actually.
Wow, that's actually really interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll talk more about that one later. I don't want to derail the listener mail section like I derailed so many other sections.
Yeah. No.
Derail the section.
Thank you, Ethan.
Good one.
You know, it was just supposed to be a subtle thing.
Too
like
bad.
Like a reference.
That is interesting. I'm gonna learn more about Deutsche Bahn. Nick, our original Nick, you've got the next comment.
Yes, we got an email from Raphael K. It says, "Hey guys, I just finished binge watching every episode after only recently finding out about your podcast channel last week. I think you guys have great chemistry, and that the freestyle discussion format, given your diverse backgrounds, experiences, focus, and preferences, enables listeners to hear about topics from different perspectives and in greater depth. I also like how you daylight the good and the bad concerning urbanism and mobility around North America and share your thoughts about them." And Raphael went on to just mention about me being in Japan, had listened to that episode last and would have reached out sooner. But again, I just said, hey, I'm going to come back because, why not? But apparently Raphael actually lives in the city in Shikoku, which is one of the smaller of the main islands near Osaka. In a town that has the highest modal share of bicycles in Japan.
Really?
So, yeah, I'm like, obviously I have to come check that out.
Obviously we all have to come
obviously.
Check
that out. We all do, yeah, yes. We'll take the Shinkansen.
We're going to stay with Raphael.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
exactly.
Yeah,
this is what we're using the Patreon budget for, folks.
After our live show on top of Mount Fuji, we're going to go to Raphael's and do a live show there.
Yeah, on bicycles.
Oh yeah, we're gonna ride
specifically really cheap shitty rented bicycles.
Yes
we do. That's it. No, so, other way.
First of all, we've never gotten a comment that nice on our channel on
I'll have
on
to leave
the podcast
one.
Channel. Yep, thank you, please do.
By the way, I would like to ask a question about the guy. I wanted to earlier, but I think we have a little bit of time and I can think.
Oh, yeah,
we
got time.
So I'm just curious about it. So I listen to your podcast, the Better Places podcast, which is a fucking awesome name, by the way. And I remember you talking
about it. It's actually just a placeholder.
It's perfect. It's great. But I remember you talking about getting a job and they had offered you a company car, but you instead asked them if you could get the Bond cart 100 or something like that.
Yes, it was.
Can you talk about that? I just want to hear about that experience and how that went, talking to your employer about it and then what the card is.
Yeah, so basically, in short, how to describe it? Yeah, so actually, probably easier to start with what the card is. Bond Card 100 is essentially, think of it like an all access VIP pass for public transportation and railway transportation. So it's issued in Germany by Deutsche Bahn, and I think it only exists in Germany. And what it does is it lets you travel. There's several versions. There's a first class one, and I had the second class one. What it lets you do is travel unlimited on all long distance, regional, S-Bahn, U-Bahn, and public transportation in Germany. That's a new thing. So now it also works on all of the buses, all of the streetcars, everything, except for boats, I think. You know, I guess fuck boats or whatever. But,
you heard it here, folks. First, folks. The rural urbanist says fuck boats.
You better say that at the end of the podcast.
Yes. The random shit that goes on up here. Anyways, yeah. So, right. Yeah. So basically that's what it does. You order it from Deutsche Bahn. It's way too expensive. I think it's, if you're under 27, it's 2,700 euros, which is, you know, actually the better price. If you're old, it is like 4,400 last I checked. Hmm. So it makes the most sense if you are regularly commuting or going between two places that you can't do it only with regional transportation. Hmm. So anyways, disclaimers out of the way. Yeah, basically I talked to the company. I pretty quickly got an offer and they're like, oh yeah, you can have a company car and all this. And I said, well, what if I had a company bond card instead? Because I framed it like, you know, it's saving you money. I don't have to pay as much tax on it, because with the car, I'd have to pay 1% tax on the total value of the car new or something like that. I don't understand German tax law. But with this, the tax situation was a little bit different. And so I didn't have to pay as much, if anything. I think they paid something on their side. Yeah. So it was pretty easy sell, actually, as it should be. You know, benefits like that should be something that you can easily pitch to an employer as, hey, you know, you were going to give me this other thing anyways, and it would have cost you this amount. So why don't you instead give me this thing and it costs you this amount less? And you can still write it off your taxes. So that was the explanation. But yeah, basically that company has now gone bankrupt, and it's a good time.
Because they bought you that.
They bought you that instead of a company card.
No, because of the company cars, they gave so many of those things out like candy. I honestly think
for real. Wow.
Really, it really hurt them. There was a lot more going on there, but I'm not going to talk about it based on pending legal proceedings.
Yeah. that is actually, you know what? I think more people should get out and like ask if their employer can get them a like a transit pass, right? Especially like where those employers realize that part of what they pay for is a parking spot, right? That's part of the expense is the space that is required for people to park their cars. And so it would be interesting to see more employers saying, hey, maybe take transit so that we, you know, kind of reduce the amount of parking that we've got to use up.
It's starting to happen here, actually.
Yeah.
Like when I was working at that company, several of the other companies started to have bikes, which they purchased for their employees to take to like really close by business meetings. In our park, like our office park, and to the train station. There was a company that always had a bike locked up at the train station as well for employees to take with them. And bike leasing is really common here, where employees get like a sponsored bike lease from the company they work for. So that's something under German law, which has been, I think, somehow promoted. So yeah.
That's super interesting. Okay. Well, we're gonna have to hear more about that sometime. But right now, we're going to wrap up the show. This has been fun. Aww. We're gonna start the outro music now, and we're gonna start with our guest Nick. Where can we go to find you, your podcast, your channel, and all of that fun stuff?
Yeah, so my channel is The Rural Urbanist. You can find me on YouTube. You can find me under a.rural.urbanist on Instagram, I think. And actually, I think a lot of people from this maybe already know my channel on YouTube, but if you actually want to follow me on Instagram, I post there a lot of still images and stuff, especially film images, which I kind of don't always get the chance to work into my videos. See what else. Somewhere on my channel page, there's a business email if you want to write me a specific message. I do have a P.O. box. Should I just give them the P.O.? You know what?
Yeah.
Email me if you want the P.O. box, because I actually don't know what it is right now. And yeah, that's it. And who knows, maybe ride more trains and transit around Karlsruhe and Heidelberg, and you might see me out there.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks. Awesome. And Ethan.
Folks, you can find me at Climate and Transit on most social media sites, except for Twitter, where I am at Climate Transit. Nick, where can we find you?
Oh, you can find me at Nick Laporte on YouTube or Nick the Door in other places.
Excellent. And as for myself, you can find me at Humane Cities wherever I happen to be. And yeah, thanks, guys. This was just one big party. And on that note, I'll just say feet first.
Car bad, train good.
Two wheels good.
And fuck boats, I guess.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. For more episodes, find us on your favorite podcatcher or on YouTube at Radio Free Urbanism.